Captain Radio.
According to a leading research scientist schooled in the art of laboratorial deception, the great unknown of mismanaged data transference has its perplexing roots in, of all places, Cleveland, Ohio. Gumdat, for those of you who have been out of the information processing loop for the last 9 months, is the apocryphal pot at the end of the data rainbow where random streams of irretrievably wayward information collect to await further instruction, which is inherently unlikely to arrive if indeed it ever existed. The very existence of Gumdat, for that matter, was believed impossible until famous former baritone Alfredo Deller applied the Cleveland Integral Theorem, which postulates with a straight face that the angles of convex polyhedron data chains are determined by sentient gamma rays with an historical interest in servo-mechanical cybernetic traffic to the bottom of a data warehouse transfer disk and, quite by accident, discovered untold piles of gummy data lumps stuck to the autonomous transportal pod. Hey, where's that band? Simultaneously, Sir Angus Cleveland, no relation to the international airport of the same name, but a dead ringer for the 24th U.S. president, if one rubs mineral oil in one eye and squints, admitted that his family-owned newspaper, the Cleveland Plain Dealer, was once upon a time a periodical that exclusively targeted the gaming crowd, especially those who delighted in abstruse rule manipulation and confounding card sharpening sleight of hand, and was originally called the Whiskers Six Straw Dealer, a name which has since entered the Gumdat. Pretty hypnotic, eh?
I'm hypnotized.
That was last week.
I am still hypnotized from last week. I'm still hypnotized from the past.
Your vocal cords are getting sleepy.
I am getting sleepy.
Neither Sir Angus...
Sir Angus.
nor Alfredo. Consciously intended to add to the rapidly burgeoning great unknown of Miss Da Trans, the present size of which is theorized to easily fill two portly Algonquin holes, but they did, as are we even now doing. Yes, by simply reciting a string of sonants, monophthongs, and alveolar phonemes into our attenuated microphones, we are stimulating the radiophonic electrons and Klingons around us, causing them to post-haste visit the otic apertures of our long-suffering listening audience, transferring even more mismanaged data into their own full-to-bursting miscellaneous informational pots. Does it trouble us? Well, yes and no. Yes, we're troubled by the massive amount of data that we are obliged to assemble to prepare for this, the 106th episode of Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, this portion of which may someday be officially deemed a speed trap on the informational highway. But no, we're not troubled by the often uneven quality of the data, which is about to hit another low spot. There. Sir Angus and Alfredo later applied their data blundering skills to the restaurant trade. Together they opened a luncheonette called Le Flambeau Orange. And became quite wealthy simply by accidentally on purpose overcharging their patrons, an anecdote which is surely the real low point in terms of quality in this particular stream of radiophonic data transference. So be it. And so it also be time to transfer to another stream of data, one not as easily influenced by matters of spatial intervention or orthogonal functions of Cleveland, a data stream that could overflow its banks at any moment. So be prepared, i.e., for the great unknown of Calvos.
Something is definitely wrong with my data, I must admit.
How so?
I've been hypnotized by these essays and by these new releases, which is what we've been listening to.
That band was a great new release.
Yes.
What was that?
Captain Video, music by Jay Chataway, who...
Joel Chataway, he was on our show.
Jay Chataway. Should we make Jay Chataway our quiz?
Fine with me.
Yes, the first music that we heard today was by Jay Chataway.
Funny, I thought it was Elton Wagner.
And Jay Chataway's fame these days, in many minds, comes from a certain musical television theme he has written, 4547762, which you could have pledged money to at one point. You could now call up and tell us what's a very popular musical theme for a television show is written by Jay Chataway. Well, right now we're listening to music by Matt Turner. This is called Bite from a new compact disc called Infiltrator. And interposed in the middle there was a performance by Martha Mook on five-string viola called Terminal Baggage. So let's listen to the rest of Matt Turner, and then we'll start talking about how we plunder music, because today's the day we hear from John Oswald. ¶¶ Music by Matt Turner. That was from Infiltrator. Cello tracks recorded at Midi West in Dale, Wisconsin. That was called Bite from our new happy news.
Is that
release.
Bite as in gastronomic bite?
Yes,
or bite?
No, it's gastronomic bite. B-I-T-E, yeah.
I guess the tune did have a bit of bite to it.
Bit of bite. Not bad. We'll listen to more from Matt Turner's...
And he'll be a guest, will he not?
No, actually he won't. At least not for a while. At some point he will either be here or we'll interview him by telephone. He's got... We'll save his CD along with Martha Mooks and a few others for our solo string festival show.
Was that coming up? I hadn't known.
As soon as we get enough material to
good.
How else do we make our decisions?
Right.
Simply based on free compact discs. In any case.
We have plenty of free compact discs for a $10 or $30 pledge here.
Yes.
They're free to us, but they're $10 or $30 to you, our listening audience. Call 454-7762 or 454-1238. Should you be so inclined to pledge at this late time,
yes.
The transmitter is in process.
Hey, yeah, that's true. We'll be blasting you out of your seats pretty soon. Won't that be great?
Yeah.
Okay. We back to the question at hand now. Jay Chataway.
Chataway.
Yes, that's still the quiz. Who's Jay Chataway? If we remember, we'll tell you at the end of the show. Plundering music. That seems to be a popular occupation. We're going to interview John Oswald today, and his music involves taking bits and pieces as short as a few milliseconds long from other familiar pieces of music and reconstructing them into a new composition. Some of them are quite obvious, like one we'll hear later called Seventh, based on Beethoven. Some are very subtle, like Gray Folded, based on the Grateful Dead. Others are schizophrenic, almost, in nature. Anyway, he obliged us by playing a kind of a verbal cat and mouse for about an hour during the interview in Toronto in the early part of this year. And we will hear, certainly, his plundering of the musical repertoire.
But he was not the first.
He was certainly not the first. It was done many, many different ways. And I did a little quick research before the show to try to find one of the earliest musical scores of plundering other people's music. And there was a term called the quodlibet. Isn't that a nice word, quodlibet? Comes from the Latin, meaning
quad for
a
place to live.
For what? Yes, and libet, as in libere, or freedom, or to please. So it means what you please. And what it came to mean, in fact, was a piece of music made up of bits and pieces of other music. Plunder libet. And so I dug around and found a piece written in 1460, printed in a songbook called the Glogauer Liederbuch, and it consists of bits and snippets of the pieces O Rosa Bella, which is a very well-known John Dunstable tune, very popular at the time, and a number of other popular songs, including In Feuershitz, Ich sag's ein Mals den lichten Morgensterne, and Zozo, mein liebste Zart, aus Zenens Kraft mit deiner Haft, and Zu aller Zeit in Gedenkensgär. So those pieces all combined into one. Now, to our modern ears, we don't hear the plunderizing going on because we don't really know the tunes. I happen to know the Dunstable, and I'm sure you do, but... I don't hear the rest of the tunes in there. It just sounds like a sort of keen old piece of early music. Now, we have a MIDI rendition here. I sent you a MIDI file since my computer decided to blow its MIDI card out, and you realized that score with your MIDI card.
I think so.
Well, let's hear it.
Yes,
so
you haven't heard this yet.
I have not heard this realization, no. This is the notes, at least, from the Glogauer Liederbuch from 1460, a real early example of plunderphonics. And that's music from 1460, a quadlibet. That's a plunderphonics of the Gothic era, late Gothic era, early Renaissance. Unless you know the tunes, you don't hear the plundering and the theft and so forth. But it is there, and it continues. I mean, we call them many times variations. That's where the composer took the tune and reworked it. And there's a lot of original note manipulation in those variations. But something unique, something very different happens when you outright steal the stuff and reorganize it in a different way. We get to the advanced version of that when we get to
I'm not ready yet.
Oh, you're not ready yet.
I'm still looking.
When we get to John Oswald. But there are other ways in which stuff has been plundered. And so I have a couple of examples of that. One, the first one will be from Karlheinz Stockhausen. And Stockhausen wrote a piece called Hymnen. Hymnen was... Oh, our DAT machine is rejecting my tape. Hello, DAT machine.
It's in sideways.
Let's try that again. All right, well, let's play something else in the meantime while we fix this machine. You got something there?
Okay. Just about here.
All right. You want to introduce this?
What?
You're going to introduce that?
As soon as I find it, I'm almost there. Okay. Many years ago, I fell under the influence of a composer by the name of Peter Schickele and his alter ego, Peter Q. Bach. And in 1970, I did a concert at my school of choice, which I won't mention, but
was a school of choice?
It wasn't choice. It was, I guess it was just the school that happened to be in the neighborhood and had a group that I formed called the, what was it called? The Well-Tempered Chamber String Band of Greater Columbus.
Yes, I remember them.
And I had a concert on a Saturday night opposite the Cleveland Orchestra, which was performing a mere block away.
Oh, I thought you could say they were performing mere drivel or something like that.
Or La Mire.
La Mire.
But this was a collection of tunes that I had written, and this particular piece that we will hear part of is the Crapsody for Chamber String Band. And at the time of the concert, I was forced, due to the restrictions of the music department, to change the name to Impromptu, because Crapsody didn't play well in a large metropolitan Midwestern university. So at the time it was
nah.
Impromptu, but on the program and everywhere else it was called the Crapsody. And this is the first movement, and I guess the second movement as well. And most of this was rehearsed that afternoon for the first time.
Well, let's hear how you have plundered the repertoire for the Crapsody for Well-Tempered Chamber String Band
of
Greater Columbus from 1970. There's more? There's another movement of that.
One more movement.
One more movement.
One more.
Ah, this is older technology here.
This is antiquified technology.
I see.
Okay.
Back to the Greater String Band. Thank you.
The Well-Tempered Chamber String Band of Greater Columbus performing the first two movements, the introduction and the Katya Red-Handed of mine, 1970. I was not given a good grade for that piece.
I don't see why not.
I think I got a C, and that was under duress.
Oh, man. Well, what did they know about plundering phonics back in those days?
That's right.
That's right. Early
and
plunder.
In fact, I was subsequently plundered by Peter Schickele, not in that piece, but in another piece called the Sonaga for Second French Horn and Piano.
We will play that someday. So yes, we'll do it. We'll compare it against the guy who made the money.
Right. There are a couple of theatrical bits in there, things that occur on stage that are very visual, that were plundered. I mean, I gave Mr. Schickele the score.
Your mistake.
My mistake. And
yes.
20-some years later, he plundered the ideas, but not the music.
Ah. Well, that's score plundering.
Right.
Score plundering. That's what we've actually sort of been talking about, is kind of the plundering of the music in its live or printed version. What Mr. Oswald will tell you about is the plundering of the recorded version. And I did that also early on in actually plundering recorded versions and didn't have a name for it yet. And I simply called this is in my early serious days, this is called Preludium. This is from August of 1972. And we're running a little late for the interview. This is WGDR Plainfield and the Calvis and Damien New Music Bazaar. We'll have the interview, I guess, about 3:05 now. Just want to
fit, but we don't want to miss this.
Fit this last one in. And I plundered 16 different recordings for this. And
unintentionally, of course.
I don't think so. This is actually an early mix as well. I do have all the original source material on separate tracks and have never done actually a modern digital mix. So what we're hearing is a mix which is 25 years old as well of the piece called Preludium All White. And I have a couple of sections from each of the groups of four similar items, and those will be heard first so that you can kind of pick out what it is I've plundered. Some of the things will be very clear, other things will not be, but first four very short 5-second excerpts from the plundered materials, and then the entirety four and a half minute long Preludium All White from 1972. A little digital dropped out there in that copy of that mix. That was Preludium, all white and early, pre-Plunderphonics named Plunderphonics piece by Dennis Bathory Kitts. There you are.
I liked it, the way that they all chose to end at the same time.
Isn't that amazing? Made from 16 pieces of source material. Some were loops, as was obvious, and some were the complete pieces. Actually, the length of the entire piece was based on the length of Stravinsky's Dove Descending, which was heard in its entirety inside there.
Oh, gee, I was listening for it, and I missed part of it, I guess.
I guess so. And there were, of course, bits of Bach.
Quite.
And, yes, Henry Brandt and Chopin, and, well, there's just a whole collection, a whole clot of composers in there.
Time for another clotted composer.
Yeah, I think so. So we're going to go now to our interview in beautiful downtown Toronto. Want to set that scene?
It was beautiful.
Very
it was downtown.
Excellent.
Snow on the ground, but downtown, beautiful nonetheless. And who should it be but John somebody?
John somebody. Okay, here it is. Interview with John Oswald.
At last, we may finally learn the truth as to who shot John Ruby. Jack Ruby.
Yes.
Back in 1963 and a half.
Our guest is Lee Harvey Oswald himself.
That's what I was led to believe, but he seems to have changed his surname to John.
Oh, is that what it was?
John
it's beginning
somebody.
To come to me now.
Now, that seems like an insufficient disguise, and probably not one that I would perpetrate. So you guys are misled.
Again? Mizzled. I think it's pronounced mizzled.
I'll go for that.
Seems to happen with it.
Although, you know, I have been called the would-be assassin of the music industry, which I guess is another one of those points of confusion with name. I've also been, and this is the one that bugs me, referred to as John Osborne.
John Osborne, yes.
The English playwright.
Of course.
One of the few people whose obituary I was glad to see, because I thought that might reduce these misidentifications, but such has not been the case. And it bothers me because there seems to be more distinction in using Oswald as a name than Osborne, but people tend to try to anglicize.
So our guest is Lee Harvey Osborne.
Ozzy Osbourne. Okay, that's closer.
Our guest really is John Oswald here on the Calvos and Damian New Music Bazaar today. Welcome to the...
How do you spell bazaar?
Bazaar. Your choice.
B-U-Z-Z apostrophe H-R.
Okay.
All right. Well... We'll have to start with from our level of ignorance, because we were introduced to your music through only a very, very few pieces. Your name is well known, but to us, your music is not. We know your piece Spectre, which we played on the show a number of times. I've heard some of your Plunderphonics pieces, and you heard...
Right.
What was it you heard?
What you said.
What I said. And... So you'll take us by the hand and lead us through the music you create and how you create it.
Just don't throw us into that musical briar patch. Oh, please, don't throw us into that musical briar patch.
That's my job.
All right, we'll accept that.
So let's have a little bit of background from you on how you got to the point of plundering.
Well, I'm the worst person to be a historian for this, because I just see so many details. Speaking of briar patches, I don't see the forest for the trees. So I'm really only effective at responding to precise and detailed questions. When it gets into historical things, I end up exposing my terribly insufficient memory for things. I just don't tend to remember things that happened a long time ago. We can talk about what's happening right now.
All right, let's work our way back.
Okay. Right now I'm working on Plexure. Actually, I'm working on Plexure version 2.2.2, which will be released... Wow, who knows who's releasing it now? Originally in 1992, a record called Plexure came out on the Japanese label Avant. And the scope of Plexure, which is a Plunderphonics piece, Plunderphonics being music that is reconfigured from very obvious audible quotes, or electroquotes is, and again, this is about Plexure, is the period of pop music from 1982 to 1992, which is the first decade of the era since the introduction of the CD, and also more or less coincided with the first decade of MTV. Two things which had some great effect on popular music. Plexure features several thousand electro quotes from pop music from that period, mostly configured in layers and morphs and various ways that keep the quotes on the threshold of recognizability. Most people seem to find the music very familiar, even if they tend to try to avoid listening to pop music. If, for instance, they listen to your show exclusively.
If it's something that, it's something that's sort of filtered into their consciousness from just being around?
Is that it's around.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you think about it, it's incredibly around. Cars pass by, you hear it. Background music in various public places. If you're looking for your show on the radio, you probably cross some of this stuff. So you hear it, and it does what it's designed to do. It gets inside very quickly. You hear a little fragment of something, and it's designed to be memorable. It's designed to, in a way, become kind of addictive.
Okay.
What happens with any kind of music is you hear it enough times and you get to like it. This stuff is designed to be stuff that you like, or at least your body likes, almost immediately. There was a firm, I'm not sure if they're still active, in Texas, who used to do EEG responses on volunteers to fine-tune pop hits. Clients would send in music, they would play it for volunteers, they'd watch the electrocardiograms, and say, hey, this is good music, this is bad music, drop this section, you know, it's a real bummer. And I remember him speaking to a university music department. All the professors were there in their tweed suits and had their pipes and everything. And he said, he looked across the crowd and said, okay, everyone in this room loves the 1910 Fruit Gum Company's Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. Some of them looked kind of puzzled. They'd never heard of this. A lot of them had heard of it and had this look of disgust on their face and lots of shaking of heads, etc. So he said, no, no, it's true. We took another group of professors from Princeton, the music department of Princeton. We hooked them up, the EEGs. We played them Yummy, Yummy, Yummy. Is it Yummy, Yummy or Yummy, Yummy, Yummy?
Three Yums.
I think there's three Yums.
Three Yums. Yeah. And they had the same kinds of look of disgust on their face that you have now, from the memory of this piece actually existing. But the EEGs were just dancing along. Their bodies were happy. They loved this music. So there's this very potent material, musical material, in these pop hits. And working along the threshold, which was in the one sense practical, I'd been commissioned to do a commercial release of Plunderphonic music, and in the past it had only been practical to do non-commercial releases, although that in many ways is impractical also, or ones that were endorsed by the people who had made the recordings, as in the case of some stuff with Elektra Records, or more recently with the Grateful Dead. And the idea I was working on at the time, independent of this commission from the Japanese record company, was the threshold of recognizability, the point where something comes into focus as, oh yes, this is something I've heard before. With music that you've heard before, it can be fragments as short as 10 milliseconds long.
Nice.
It almost sounds just like colored clicks.
Yeah.
But in some cases, somebody who's heard something, then several things, and then are played one of these clicks and say, oh yes, that's that piece. Very short fragments of music. So you can theoretically stick a sequence of 100 units of, or phonemes of music
phonemes
within 1 second, that could in some way be deciphered under certain conditions. Most of the fragments in Plexure are longer than that. They are as short as 3 milliseconds long and go up to several seconds in length. Usually when they're several seconds, they exist in layers with other things where through various means material can morph into other material. And all this stuff kind of hovers at some sort of roughly calculated norm of what the threshold of recognizability is. There's variations. One fellow I know managed to identify 340 sources in the original Plunderphonic on one listen, which was extremely out of the norm. Most people are able to say, oh yes, I know what that is, to one or two items, which have been further obscured in the preparation for the re-release. So that's Plexure, and that covers the whole kind of Plunderphonic thing.
What are you after in doing it? In using that as source material?
Pleasure and satisfaction. Plexure, which is a word, I think a Greek-derived word, although my memory escapes me on that also, refers to the texture in a weave. The interaction between various elements in a woven pattern. But it also has, let's say, a morph connotation of pleasure and texture.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason I do these things is because they're pieces of music that I derive a great deal of satisfaction from listening to, and I can't find the equivalent in my local record store.
Okay, yeah. Now, you hinted at something, I'm not sure if I picked it up correctly, about having some trouble or difficulty at one time, which has been resolved, about using these samples or these excerpts as you were going along.
Yeah, I've been directly threatened with a legal argument in one instance, which involved CREA, which is the Canadian equivalent of the RRIA in the United States, Recording Industry Association. What's the other R stand for? The Real Recording Industry Association?
I think it's CREA, the RIA.
It's a double RIA, I think. Canadian Recording is the Republic. Anyways, the whatever it is, and CREA are organizations employed by the major record companies.
Right.
There's about five of them, which cover the whole world and release 99% of the product. It's about 90% of the overall product in the world record market, and less than 1% of the variety. They tend to be watchdogs for the industry. They look around for cases of copyright infringement, things like that. And this one record I did called Plunderphonic, which I had about 24 different pieces, each of which focused on a well-known musical icon from Igor Stravinsky, Beethoven to Dolly Parton, Michael Jackson, James Brown, Dick Hyman. The thing that was noticed by CREA and then was passed on to Michael Jackson organization was the cover photo, which was a picture of Michael Jackson from a cover of his record, Bad, and that was reconfigured in ways that one prude at CREA found very offensive.
Did you do a gender change on Michael?
There was a gender change, which was based on, I think, reasonable speculation as to Michael's career trajectory. Michael thought it was, quote, very, very funny. Well, that's not a direct quote. That's a third-hand quote. That it was
it's good enough for Calvus and Damien.
It's good enough for Mondo 2000. And But nonetheless, he sanctioned their coming after me. And although, again, this was not a commercially released item, at least in copyright in Canada, there are certain provisions for someone who feels like their copyright has been infringed to claim on the basis of mutilation of their intellectual property. So we had some legal discussions for a while, and that was all settled, and that was the end of my...
Is everybody happy? Or stop
I was happy.
Oh, you're...
Yeah. The settlement was based on a list of agreements that I sent them through a lawyer I had employed. I sent them several. The first one offered to let them pay me a certain ongoing sum for to eternity and to release this record as a free item, which would be distributed through all their markets. This was mostly picking on CBS, who were also represented in this. Which they didn't go for. So they went about halfway down my package of lists, and they chose a list which I found perfectly agreeable, in which the stipulations were that I would get to talk about this, so that I am talking about it. They would receive from me all the remaining copies I had of this CD. There was about 300 of them left from a pressing of about 1,000. The master tape used to replicate the CD, et cetera, on the provision that they would do what they said they wanted me to do, which was to destroy them. I said, no, I'm not into destroying CDs or burning books or anything like that, but if you want to do that, you may, because right from the beginning I stipulated that anyone who wanted to use this package, Plunderphonic, in any sort of way was not restricted by me from doing that, which is how Kriya ended up getting a copy in the first place. They asked for one. So in a sense, they were asking for all the other copies, and they got them. The copies that had already been distributed, though, which at first they were demanding be recalled and were threatening to take a legal action against radio stations, et cetera, that were playing it, their stipulation was dropped, and most people were able to keep their copies. So they just got the remaining copies I had. And what else did we agree upon? That was it.
Can we hear something?
So that effectively took me out of the music distribution business, the free music distribution business, which was impractical in the long run anyway. And it also sent out a signal that I was no longer, because I'm legally required not to produce more of these, this particular CD. So it sent out a signal and allowed other people to kind of take up the slack. So it's continued to be distributed in various forms. Everything from there's a little 2-inch English CD version of it to there's various organizations. I think there's three of them in the States, one of them that I know of in Canada, one in England called the Copyright Violation Squad. Who will, if you send them a blank cassette, tape over it with Plunderphonic and a similarly banned item by a group called Negative Land, and send that back to you for no cost.
Negative Land is a free music essay posted on the internet, or free music philosophy. Let's hear some.
Yeah, they're much more militant than I am.
Let's hear one of your Plunderphonic.
Okay, sure.
That's a good one.
Well, where's that Music Works one? Do you have that? Here it is. We'll listen to a very early one. In fact, the first pop-related Plunderphonics piece is from 1975. It's a bit, in a way, a precursor to rap music. And then maybe if we skip ahead, this is track one, to track three, you can hear a little bit of a live performance of a Beethoven piece that was on the original Plunderphonic CD.
Great. Here's some music by John Oswald from his Plunderphonic.
Oh, you just want that for the tape. We don't have to listen to these things. Do you want to listen to it?
We will hear it.
Oh, so we can talk about it.
So we can talk about it.
What's civilized radio?
Isn't that amazing?
I mean, quite often I'm talking to guys and you know, say, okay, we just listened to it, and that was very interesting.
Well, we did that all the time. We do that all the time, since we haven't heard it ahead of time. We get to hear it now, just like everyone else.
Okay.
Our guest is John Oswald.
And on this particular broadcast, I want to get into it this way. When God said something, he can't take it back. You can't take it back, Lord. I got your number here. You said you'd bless me going in and bless me coming out. You said everything I put my hands on, you would bless it. Come on, shout amen, somebody. God said I'll make you the head and not the tail. Everything you set your hands to, I will bless it. If you will walk in my way.
And we're back again.
And we're back again. Power from 1975 and Sevens from 1988. The latter one, particularly that what you talk about, little fragments, evocative nature, I guess, little fragments, being able to pick them up and assess them, suck them in, and make your brainwaves happy.
Yeah, I think ideally a plunderphonics piece works when the source is constantly familiar, but obviously something new is happening. There's a transformation of a recognizable source, and that recognizability is omnipresent through the piece.
What the question I'm sure you've been asked is the kind of dilemma, the creative dilemma there in using familiar material that's already there as a source material, rather than generating it and making it familiar by its own compelling character.
The creative dilemma. Bing!
Yeah. Let's hear that.
Well, what's the dilemma? I don't feel there is any dilemma.
Well, let me pose it as a dilemma. Let me present it as if it were my dilemma, and I hear it and I say, well, you know, I already know this. Why is this yours? Why didn't you give me some new material to listen to, so I could get familiar with it and get rewarded that way instead of giving me material I've heard before and reconfiguring it, as which is the word that you use.
Well, I both don't care if you finally decide that it isn't mine, and I don't think it's necessary to come up with new material all the time. There's 5,000 new records. You know, all these things we've been listening to are recordings. There's 5,000 new recordings coming out every week. Have you listened to all of them?
I have.
Okay.
I have.
Okay.
But I think I'm one of the few.
And there's a few probably that you'd like to listen to again, and you're just looking for the time to get around to that.
No, there's nothing. Not one I would want to hear a second time.
So, then I should be generating new material for you all the time?
Please. At your leisure, though.
Okay, at my leisure. I do end up continuing to make new records, but I don't think it's necessary to come up with new stuff. There's just so much old stuff that there's still to be listened to. So,
is this a direction?
There's no dilemma.
Is this a direction that other people can take, that should take?
The only reason I see against doing that is the fiscal situation involved in doing plunderphonics is not necessarily the most practical way of creating music these days.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you know, the most practical way of creating music is to do stuff that is totally redundant. But there's no other reason not to do it.
We about a year ago, we talked to Nick Collins.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a probably well-known piece now called Devil's Music. Yeah, you know it, and does it have a certain relationship to what you do? Do you feel a kinship to that?
It does have a relationship in that it does take obvious sources. It's not. It doesn't go to any sort of great lengths to disguise its sources, which mm-hmm. I think in the case of Devil's Music was taken from the radio.
Mm-hmm.
The big difference between the things that Nick Collins does and a few other people, Carl Stone,
right,
David Shea in New York, Christian Marclay using vinyl, and a lot of DJs, is that's all related to the performance of these materials. Whereas almost everything I've played for you, with the exception of that one version of Seventh, is created in the studio, not in real time, but over an extended period. It's much more like painting than taking a photograph or making a photograph. I can get in a lot of trouble with that analogy, but it's a very time-intensive studio-based process making these things, and I don't perform plunderphonics pieces in public.
Mm-hmm. Does that have a future?
Does what have a future?
Plunderphonics.
Well, it does for me, because I still have more projects to work on that I'd like to work on. The records are more or less, and the CDs are more or less permanent, so they have their own little futures.
We have a feature on our show occasionally, which Damien creates, called the Best of the Bizarre, in which he takes very small snippets of previous shows, usually in groups of five shows, and creates a piece from those. Inside some of those are the previous playing of the previous best of, and it becomes somewhat recursive. Mm-hmm. Do you have any of that kind of recursive stuff inside your own by taking from what you've already done and using that as part of the source material included with new material?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Well, for instance, in Plexure, there are a couple of quotes from there's at least one quote from the Plunderphonic CD. There's material that overlaps with the Plunderphonic CD, although not very much, because most of the material used in the Plunderphonic CD came from that period before 1982, the source material. But there is one quote that exists, and because it is a quote in the first place in the first Plunderphonic CD, it could be referred to the original material, but the original material is from the 1960s. So hearing it in the new version seems at first anomalous to the 1982 to 1992 restriction, but in both cases they're the first note of the Plunderphonic CD and the new version of Plexure, not the old version of Plexure, and the last note of the 1960s source. Maybe we should just listen to that note.
Let's
get an idea of what it's like. Let's see, the new Plexure. Is it in here? Yes. Second track, which is really the first track.
Great. The title of this?
Plexure.
This is the original Plexure.
This is the new Plexure.
Okay. hard time keeping up with which of we're talking about.
You guys want a copy of Plexure?
Great. Let's have a copy of Plexure.
Okay.
In the meantime, while we're opening the package, we'll play it for you. Music by John Oswald. Plexure. Hear that wrapper coming off.
Okay, so...
Come here.
Plecture music by John Oswald.
Yeah, I think I've heard parts of that before.
Yes, indeed. That's the new version of Plecture, the legal, supposedly legal version of Plecture.
Right.
We'll continue our interview with John Oswald next week.
It's a real eye-opener. And
I thought tooth-puller was what... He was a reluctant interviewee, don't you think?
Quite.
Well, maybe people like him a lot and really admire and lap up instead
of asking questions. I guess we just
didn't.
It's our un-Canadian nature.
It's our unlapping nature.
Right, yeah.
That's the two of that. WGDR, Plainfield. It's the Calvis and Damien New Music Bazaar. And these are our Plunderphonia days, 2 weeks of plundering the Threshold Warehouse.
Yeah, and there's plenty to be plundered.
There certainly is. We've got a couple other tunes here. Since he did mention Carl Stone, we've brought along his latest compact disc, Kamiabar, and we'll play Axis from that. And this is the plundering of live sounds.
Yeah, do you imagine that John plundered Carl?
Is that a piece?
It may be.
Yes. Well, coming up, we'll play Axis from Kamiabar, then a cut from a CD called Kiss Closed My Eyes by Laurel McDonald, who is also a Plunderphonia artist and a friend of Oswald's. And then we'll turn to an old LP, a thing called Soap Opera Suite, which is also a plundering. It's an acoustical plundering. I'm not sure if it counts the same way of television.
It
soap
does
opera.
To me.
It does to me as well. And we'll wrap up this last set with Nicholas Collins' Devil's Music, which is also plundering. Did you notice a little edginess about when we mentioned Nick Collins?
He twitched. He did twitch. I don't know that there's anything between the two.
Well, perhaps not, but it was a nice twitch. Anyway, Carl Stone, Axis.
この番組はご注意ください。 Thank you. as married.
Well, I guess I thought you were aware of the fact that it's done. You've been pretty well on the rocks for at least 6 months now.
Here's some rotten excuse for a wife, you know that?
Well, I'm asking you for a divorce.
Are you
saying I should forgive him? That I should love him rather than jail?
Barbara, I really do hope you understand. I was hoping I wouldn't have to go into it, but look, it has to be told. There's no other way around it. You have to know.
I've been afraid my faith isn't strong enough. To tell you the truth, I'm not really sure how it happened.
Nothing to worry about. When I find out from my boss that my daughter's a drug freak...
Daddy, the only thing John wants from this family is acceptance.
It's invariably initiated by some form of business withdrawal.
She's on the ragged edge. Don't you realize what you've been through when you have to hear? Is this my punishment for having been so mean?
She's evil. And I think she's come here to try and destroy us.
What I mean is, I already know what happened between you and Morgan. Could you think Peg is...
Yes. That is exactly what I think.
I don't think the girl will live.
Why?
That's what the doctor suggested.
Oh, but you're born, doctor. Wasn't that we have to come back to?
Well, it's someone who has a very unsavory reputation. As married, mediator.
But your marriage has got in for no reason.
You're reasonably happy, my man. That's about all we can hope for now.
It was time she was disillusioned about him.
She was out of work. She was drinking.
As I do, I...
It was simply a very bad situation. She was out of work. She was drinking.
Thank you.
there's a tune you can just start humming and continue humming all afternoon.
You can dance to it.
Maybe you can. I can't. I foot's tied to my chair.
That's the music by Nick Collins. That's the Devil's music. We actually never played the part one of that. We played part two a couple of times. This is part one. Before that, what was before that?
Soap opera suite.
Oh yes, Soap Opera Symphony. That's by Stephen Kraft. And before that, Oran No, etc., etc. The rest of the title is unpronounceable from my tongue, by Laurel McDonald, who calls herself a what? Did you say a what? Not a plunderphonics person, but a.
Oh dear, it's on her CD. It was an appropriation artist.
Appropriation artist. Excellent, excellent. Well, gosh. Plunderphonia Day here, Appropriation Day. Let's fade Mr. Collins down and let's go to one of the groups that John Oswald mentioned to us, and that was Negative Land. And Negative Land has gotten quite a reputation in the past, gosh, 20 years almost now. But we happen to be the proud owners of their first handmade jacket and LP that went in it. So here's a cut from the very first Negative Land LP from 1979-1980. It's just called Negative Land.
And it can be yours for a pledge of some untoward amount of money.
Yes.
To be a good that's not
right, sir.
Negative Land from their first recording in 1979-1980. Don't sound much like that today, but they're still a rather odd crowd.
Maybe so, but I was beginning to learn. You turned it down just when I was beginning to learn.
No, they turned it down.
Oh.
That was the end. That was the end of the cut, yes. Let's do a piece called Plunder. What is it called? Plunder File. This is music by Philip Strong. By the way, we'll have played... about 18 pieces on today's show. Of those 18 pieces, only 5 can be obtained. They're either private releases done for this show, or they are out of print. So we remind you that you can always order a tape of the Calvison Damien New Music Bazaar. So that's just particularly for today's show, because practically nothing of what we played is commercially available. So let's hear this piece by Philip Strong, also not commercially available. Here it is, Plunder File. Thank you.
A production of Multimedia.